When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Later on in the show, I'm going to be talking with Jenna, who's got stories about orbs, sleep paralysis, this raccoon woman, maybe a raccoon boy as well. She's got some ghost stories, stories of astral projection, and more. Before we get to Jenna, I'm going to be talking with my friend Billy from Cryptids and Cards. It's a cryptid trading card set. Well, it's Trading Cards Plus. It's a really interesting thing that he's developing with sort of an interactive component to it as well. And before we even talk to Billy, I need to mention that tomorrow night, May 10th at 7 p.m., will be my debut on Whatnot with Riverbend. We're doing a live show at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It'll be like a hangout with a live auction component. I'll be auctioning like signed copies of my books and artwork, maybe some prints. Maybe I'll do some live drawing. We might have some ephemera there as well. Follow Riverbend on Whatnot. Also, make sure to follow Strange Familiars on Whatnot, because going forward, we'll be doing these shows under our own name. But tomorrow night's show will be with Riverbend, so make sure to follow them on Whatnot. Come see us at 7 p.m., hang out. Hopefully, it'll be a fun time. One more thing to mention before we get to the interviews tonight. Chad's second Walk with a Woodsman event is happening this Saturday, May 11th at Sunnerwald Natural Foods in Spring Grove, Pennsylvania. This week, his class will be on firecraft. It starts at 9 a.m. For more information, you can call 717-225-3825. That's the number for Sunnerwald Natural Foods. Once again, join Chad this weekend, Saturday, May 11th, for his second Walk with a Woodsman of 2024. All right, let's go ahead and hear from Billy about Cryptids and Cards. I'd like to welcome Billy Krause to Strange Familiars. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you, Tim? Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. Well, it's been a while, but we've done a few hikes together. You were actually with me. I think you were one of the few people probably to hike Toad Road end-to-end before they made it a public park. Even still, I don't think that many people have done it, because I was out there recently. And no one's been there, I don't think, since the last time I did it with my friend John a couple years ago. But I don't know if you remember this. This is one I've talked about this on the show quite a few times. When we were in the middle of that trail, we heard a car door slam, or at least I heard it. I don't think you heard it, but I heard it. And it was sounded like it was right in my right ear. And I was like, what is that? What was that? It was like a car door slam. And I was actually looking for like a four-wheel drive vehicle, not that one could get out there or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first time I heard that sound. I actually heard it again with my buddy Chad on another trail down by Lock 12. And I was able to record it. That time I got it on tape. But that's one of the sounds that John Keel talks about associated with the paranormal, the anomalous car door slam. So
interesting.
Yeah, you were actually with me for that. But we're here tonight to talk about cryptids and cards. So tell me about this. What is this?
Sure. As you know, I'm a huge, I don't even know if fan is the right word for the subject because it feels, I don't know, not natural. I have an interest in the obscure and the unseen, what lies between the lines and the margins. Ever since I was young, even, you know, on the Kickstarter, it shows a book from Daniel Cohen. When I was a kid in elementary school, man, going to the library, and I would get these books on just weird stories. Mm-hmm. And I was a fan of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and the audio books. I actually listened to, I didn't even realize that they had like the original audio books on YouTube. They're as ridiculous as I remember in terms of the narration. I used to take out books on how to hunt for ghosts. And then I would go out to my grandmother's house in Ligonier, PA, and my cousin and I would go into the basement insisting, well, we would hear stories from our parents and stuff about things that they experienced in the house. And the next thing you know, I'm going over to my cousin's. He lived two doors down from my grandma at the time. I would have these books from school, and we'd go in the basement and try to, you know, investigate and all these things. But it didn't just end there with paranormal. It delved into the world of what we, you know, now refer to as cryptids, cryptozoology. And I just became obsessed with it, man. When I was a kid, I had stacks and stacks of books all the time. The book that I mentioned in the Kickstarter, I actually just repurchased a used copy of it off eBay for like $4.
Oh, isn't that cool though?
Yeah, man. And here's the cool part. It actually had the little pocket in it where they stamp when people take the book out, and it had the library stamp. I can't remember which library and which state and whatnot, but mm-hmm. when I opened it and saw it, I was just like, man, this is like, everything's just kind of coming full circle with that subject. So anyway, that book is near and dear to my heart in that it introduced me to like the Mothman.
Right, yeah. So it's called Railway Ghosts and Highway Horrors. It's got a great cover. You show the cover on your Kickstarter. The cover's fantastic on that.
Right. And it's interesting because, so Daniel Cohen, he is no longer with us in the physical, but he wrote a ton of books on subjects like that. And, I mean, he did hardback cover books and all that. And then they kind of like, they would do different covers when they were marketed, you know, with kids and things like that to make them more cartoonish or comic book-like, mm-hmm. things like that. I didn't realize he was so embedded in the culture. So I do credit him with being one of the inspirations, I guess. And then, you know, as I started to get older, I was always, in my social circles, I was always the guy that was into Bigfoot or whatever, Mothman, Bigfoot, Wendigos, Loch Ness Monster, all of them, every single last one of them. I knew at least a little bit about all of them. So as time went on and I got older, I'm now 40 years old now, which is interesting. So it feels weird like doing trading cards at 40, but whatever, man. I'm also an idea guy. So as you know, I was involved with the local music scene for a long time and did the touring thing and opened up for all kinds of people, yada, yada. But I was always one to have an entrepreneurial spirit. Probably, I would say, the origins of this idea were back in maybe 2017 or 2018. Because I mentioned it to a few friends. You know, you were one of them. And a few other artist friends. And everybody that, you know, I shared the idea with really thought it was interesting. So the idea was cryptid collectible trading cards. And I wanted them to also be not only beautiful art, but I wanted them to also be informative and a resource kind of similar to, like a card catalog or something. I'm even working on ideas for how to store in a way that reminds you of searching through, say, like a card catalog to find a book. Mm-hmm. And to make them scannable, you know, with a QR code on the back and build a database on every single cryptid I can possibly find for every state in the United States, and then branch out to international areas and different countries and things like that. The one thing I always noticed was that only one side of it was really represented. So you either had really cool images from talented artists, but then you didn't have the information side of it, or you would have all this information at your fingertips and the images just aren't good. So my idea was to bridge those together to get both the best of both worlds. So beautiful cards, high quality printing, and from the card standpoint is to make them collectible, and that we have serialized cards and we have artist sketch cards and autographed cards and insert cards and unique style printing cards. But then the interactive aspect of it that I guess would kind of put it in the world of like a TCG, like trading card game, because it's not a game, but I want to attach every single card to a geographic location. You know, everybody knows when it comes to Mothman, Point Pleasant is that place.
Sure.
You know, and they have the Silver Bridge, you know, and all that stuff with the Mothman prophecies, John Keel, all that. So the goal would be to actually allow the cards to also be almost like a tracker. So when you scan that card, it takes you to this interactive map that we are building, which is actually inspired by you and your books, you know, the other. Mm-hmm. And we want to actually make a map of the other and tie our cards into sightings. We're actually even considering doing something like famous hoaxes, do a limited run of, you know, the hoaxes that sure. are out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
There's a whole world out there.
They're part of the story, you know.
There you go. Right, right. So what we want to do then is, with that interactive map, we actually want to build a geocache trail to encourage people to get out, right? They can find the coordinates when they scan their card, and they can get out and actually find geocaches that are based on cryptids and cards. So we'll brand the boxes and things like that. We'll put logbooks in them. We'll put trackables, geocoins in them. We'll encourage people to put stuff in, take stuff out, move them around. But eventually, when you look at the bigger picture and you back out and take a look at everything, you're going to see this big, beautiful trail that you can actually follow around the entire United States. We'll probably divvy it up into, like, you know, there's some state trails to encourage people and give them incentives. So, for example, if you complete a trail in Pennsylvania, because we're going to do individual states. Right now, we're doing a base set of 10 cards of the 10, quote-unquote, most popular cryptids. And that's just to introduce the brand. And then what we're going to do then is introduce what we're referring to them as our case studies. So each set for each state will be, for example, Pennsylvania, case studies or case study, colon, Pennsylvania. And then we'll dive deeper into the realm of happenings in Pennsylvania, which is, you and I both know, we have more than our fair share of interesting stuff that goes on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Plenty to pick from in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Pennsylvania, for example, we could set up a trail that involves one that's near and dear to my heart, the Conowago Phantom, because I live on the Conowago Creek.
Right.
Personally, I haven't had any sightings, but the sightings that have been reported, there are some. That there's one in particular. It was actually less than a mile from where I live at a bridge mm-hmm. where, you know, one of the Phantom sightings were. So anyway,
yeah.
Essentially, they could travel through Pennsylvania and complete a cryptid trail, a cryptids and car trail that, there's clues and hints that we're going to hide throughout this process that if you get through it and you can put these clues together, you can actually essentially unlock a very rare card that is what we would refer to as like a secret rare card that there's only, we'll say, 5 of them in existence, and they're hand drawn by an artist and signed and hand numbered, but you have to like unlock it and figure it out where we placed it, essentially. So what we were thinking of doing in terms of placement of cards, obviously we don't want to put cards out, you know, in the elements and then they fall apart. So what we were thinking was, is to maybe do something like use seed paper where they embed like wildflowers and, you know, whatever native wildflowers we would have around here, print cards, like a redemption card, letting you know, yes, you found it. This is where it is. But then give them a code that they can contact us with, and we will actually give them the real card, and then they can take that seed card that they found, and then they can plant it wherever they want, really.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I tell you what, the geocache aspect I love, because it's making a real-world component. Like you said, it's not quite a game, but it's getting people involved, and it's getting people outside, and getting people to these locations. You have some samples of the artwork on the Kickstarter. Is this the main artist, the one you have the samples of?
As of now, yes, Jay is the main artist. A few months ago, my good friend Jay, he contacted me saying, hey, man, are you familiar with, you know, Michaud? And do you know of anything that goes on there? And I said, well, pull up a seat, you know. But next thing you know, I remembered that, hey, he's an artist. He's a good artist. He's a great artist.
Yeah, the samples look great on there.
We rushed around to get the Kickstarter up and running just to get the idea out there to people. All I know is that we have this idea, and everybody that we run it by, we've run it by some folks that are content creators, you know, that get millions of views, and they're excited. They want us to design cards for them. And so we're starting to get some feedback. And I think this thing's going to work. I hope it's going to work. I'm trying to speak it into existence and manifest it in a positive way. I just really, 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 really want to see it happen. I just think it would be so cool, man, to go out and like see people on a trail and they're learning about this cool spot that anybody else that's on the trail thinks is just a tree.
Right, right.
But if you look a little deeper, what did somebody see behind that tree at one point, you know?
Right on. So the Kickstarter's live, CryptoZine yes. Cards. I will put the link in the show notes. Do you have a timeline when you think the launch date might be? I understand it's, you know, your early days, but...
Sure. So the Kickstarter's 30 days. We are kind of leaning into being focused on just that at the moment. I personally think probably in July to August.
I heard you might have some guest artists as well.
Yes, yes. You may have heard of him. One of them, he goes by the name Timothy Renner.
Right on. I love trading cards. I've done a little series that I've released, you know, just limited editions with like books and stuff. Yeah, I'm excited to be a part of this, even a small part. I love what you're doing here. Once again, I'm going to put the link in the show notes so people can find your Kickstarter.
And even if you're not in a position to financially support, give us a shout. Let us know that you like it. Share it on your, you know, different social media. There's a share button on there. It doesn't cost a dime to do that, just or even just to talk about it. We just want to do the right thing for the community. We're not in this to extract money from people. That's not the end goal. But you know, we need capital to make this thing happen.
Sounds great. Once again, it's CryptoZine Cards, and the Kickstarter link will be in the show notes. Billy, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.
Strange Familiars is brought to you by our patrons. We could not and would not make the show without them. If you like what we do and you'd like to support us and get extra content besides, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. All of our patrons get commercial-free versions of the weekly show, plus extra content. We do at least one full extra episode of Strange Familiars every month for our patrons. Sometimes we do more. To check out all the options for support, you can go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Again, that's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's also an option on Apple Podcasts, with a program called Patron of the Strange. Apple Podcast patrons get the weekly commercial-free episodes and the monthly extra content as well. And once again, thank you to all of our patrons. No matter where you're supporting us, that's a huge help.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, next up is my conversation with Jenna.
I'd like to welcome Jenna to Strange Familiars. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing all right. Sounds like you have a variety of things to talk about with us, and I'm excited to hear your stories. So did you want to basically start at the beginning, start in chronological order?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, there's quite a list and it's quite varied. Yeah, so I'm thinking back to my first home that I lived in.
As comfortable as you are giving this information about, where was this?
I lived in Vancouver. I lived just outside of Vancouver, BC, British Columbia, Canada, which is funny. It's actually like totally Bigfoot territory, but I don't have any Bigfoot stories.
That's fine. I won't kick you off the show.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, if you go into certain areas here, like go camping and stuff, there's like Bigfoot sculptures and Bigfoot signs and this and that, like, you know, very kind of touristy thing. But I unfortunately don't have any sightings or anything yet at the moment. Maybe when I spend more time in the forest, that'll happen. But yeah, so I guess the first thing that kind of comes to mind is I remember seeing my first orb when I was quite young. I'm thinking I was like 5 or 6, and it was at night, and I think it was the night before Christmas. Like, I feel like I was really excited, and it's funny because, like, looking back now, I remember thinking like it had to do something with like Santa.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, or like the reindeer or something, you know? Like,
yeah, I would assume that as a kid.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, just this like bright color, like bright light, ball of light in the corner of my room. Yeah, I don't remember too much about it because I was quite young, but I just remember being like, oh yeah, there's like a floating like light in my room. But I was like so excited about Christmas and everything. So like part of them, you know, still believing in all the magic of Christmas and everything. I just kind of figured it was something to do with that.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure I would have gone to the same place as a kid.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I had on my mind, right? Like, Santa's coming. You know, he's coming with his reindeers. Like, I mean, yeah, I guess I tied the two together.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny looking back now, though, because I actually see them now quite regularly.
Inside or outside?
Mostly inside.
And how big are they normally?
So, like, if I think back to that one, it was probably, like, I feel like there was, like, one bigger one, like, maybe, like, a grapefruit size, and then, like, feel like it was, like, moving and changing a bit. There might have been a smaller one near it. The one that I think of that was, like, a full-on orb that was, like, probably the size of a, like, volleyball.
Wow.
It was, like, I just woke up one night and, like, rolled over, and there's a freaking orb just floating across my room in front of my dresser. But at this point, I mean, I'm, as they say, out of the broom closet. Like, I work with spirits, and I see orbs and colors. Like, I usually see, like, sparkles and flashes of colors and light.
I was going to ask about the color of the orbs. Like, do they manifest in different colors? Are they always the same color?
Just, like, white, kind of a little bit more like you'd see in the pictures, kind of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a sphere, just, like, white or, like, light color.
the ones that I've seen in the woods and stuff, they seem to be self-illuminating and they don't light up too much of what's around it. But I have seen, it's crazy. I have seen some that you could see kind of light up the trees a little bit around them, but they're rare, I think. Most often, the ones I've seen are sort of self-illuminating. They don't really light up anything around them. Mm-hmm. Did you notice anything about that? Like, did it light up the room, or was it just sort of self-illuminating?
It was definitely, this one that I saw more recently was definitely just kind of like, yeah, self-illuminated. Again, it was one of those things where I just kind of saw it and just kind of not scared at all, but I was just kind of like, okay, that's happening, and went back to sleep.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a bright light or anything like that. Maybe a soft glow, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's odd because they're so easy to see, I guess, because it's dark. I mean, they're there and they're illuminated, but they, like I said, at least most of the ones I've seen really don't light up anything around them.
So I guess I would have had what you might call my first kind of like sleep paralysis situation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was like maybe 4 or 5, 6 years old.
Wow.
And I just remember it was like there were small creatures trying to pull me and drag me out of my bed. Yeah, just the usual, you know, like stuck, not able to move. But like I felt the blanket being pulled. I felt myself being pulled. And it was definitely like small creatures, like multiple ones. I don't remember seeing anything. I just remember knowing, like feeling that's what was pulling me off. And again, it was a long time ago, so I don't remember how I like broke out of that or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom did say I had some weird sleep walking situations. Like once, I think a real estate agent or something had left a door unlocked, and I somehow managed to get outside into the yard sleepwalking and just stood there staring at the sky.
Wow.
Which is a little creepy, but that's what I felt. Like I almost felt like they wanted to get me outside. Yeah, I don't know. I vividly remember that feeling of like, you know, I'm being dragged out of my bed right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how a kid that young processes sleep paralysis. That must be crazy. Because it was hard enough for me when I was 18 or 19 or whenever it started.
Yeah. I didn't have another situation like that until I was like, I'd say like 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at my grandma's house. We were sleeping over one night. And my two younger sisters were in a different room. I remember the noise first, like the... I feel like there was something there, the window, maybe that's where the sound was coming from. But then I remember just being frozen stiff like a board. And there was, I guess this could have been like almost like an orb. It was like a light scanning up and down my body. So like I felt just stiff as a board, and I didn't hear the like a, it sounded like what you would think a freaking flying saucer would be.
Yeah.
And the light coming in and just scanning up and down my body. And me wanting, that's the time where I remember the distinct feeling of wanting to scream and not being able to like move a muscle or make a peep.
Mm.
And that one scared me and shook me for a while. I had a lot of insomnia and like some health issues and things like that. So I had weird sleep, and I'd stay up all night and whatever, you know, or sleep in, have trouble waking up. So there were a lot of times where when I was a teenager in like early 20s, I had what I found out were like hypnagogic hallucinations or sleep paralysis. But those ones are different. Like now I can almost tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some that are like, oh, this is weird. Like one time I saw like spiders made out of thread crawling on my pillows, you know, like, and I was like, oh, you know, or I'll hear my family members, or, you know, like one time I heard my sisters outside crying when I knew they were at school. And then I taught myself how to get out of it, right? And like wake up. But there's times where I've been like manhandled. Like one of them was sat on top of me and tried to take my shirt off. Like, I remember struggling with my shirt, and then I got really angry, and I said, what do you want? I was able to scream then. I think by then I had had enough practice with this. and it stopped. And when I woke up, I realized, like, my arm is halfway out of my shirt. You know, like, those were different.
Yeah.
Those were different than just, like, hearing or seeing weird things or being stuck where you see your room. Like, I would see my room, but my eyes were closed, you know, things like that. Like, just being almost stuck in that between, right?
Yeah.
And then there are ones where you're like, no, something is there, something is visiting me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's almost like a big dream, little dream thing. You know, like sometimes it is just like sort of very mundane, just sleep paralysis, whatever. And then other times it's more, you know, it's something else.
Yeah. Yes, I remember you calling it that, and that's totally what it seems like. And I have the same thing with, like, spirit visitations in the dream. I mean, that's usually family or, like, my old dog or whatever, right? But, like, yeah, like, you can just, there's just something different. Mm-hmm. There's just something, yeah, bigger, stronger, more, like, real about it.
Yeah, yeah, it feels more present or something, yeah.
Yeah, this one's kind of funny. This is the only, like, cryptic type thing I've ever witnessed. And I remember thinking it was, like, so silly and weird. Okay, again, I was quite young. This is that same house. I was, like, I think I was about 7 because my baby sister ended up at the hospital with, like, I think it's like croup or whooping cough, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd actually called the ambulance, and they took my mom and my sister. Well, my dad had to pack up me and my other sister in the car and bring us to the hospital later on. And this area, like, there was a lot of raccoons. And we had these, like, little ditches. The ditches were, like, under the driveways, or, like, you know, like, they were beside the road, but all the driveways would go over it. So we had these little, like, almost, not like a stream, but yeah, like a little passageway underneath.
Yeah, like a little drainage or something, yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember it was later at night, and my dad was on the other side. I was in the back seat, and my dad was on the other side of the car, leaning over and putting my sister in the car seat. And so he had the door open, and he was leaning over. And I remember, I don't know if it was like the moon or maybe a street light casting some light down. And I see this freaking shadow, like this head come up from like beside our driveway in the ditch. And again, like I'm really young, but it's like, it's nighttime. Like, who is that? What are they doing? And then I realize this person has freaking like ears sticking out of their head, like pointy, almost cat ears.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I didn't see any details because the light was behind him, but he was younger. I refer to him as a he, I don't know. That was another thing. It looked like a young boy or teenager. And I'm like, what is this person doing out at this time of the night crawling in the ditches? And they had these like ears. That was the weirdest thing. I remember just being like, what? Why do they have ears on their head? So I guess I didn't think I thought much of that. I just remember being like, what the hell was that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a few years older, we moved to another city not too far away. And I ended up becoming friends with this guy, and we figured out that we both went to the same school in that area that I used to live in. And he said the weirdest thing. He was like, we were talking about just stuff that we remember from that school. And then he goes, did you ever hear about the raccoon lady? And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, apparently there was like some young girl or like teenage, I don't know, some young woman ran away or something. I don't know. Something about a woman or a girl like procreating with these freaking raccoons that were everywhere. They were everywhere. Like my mom's dog got mauled by one. Like they were just like everywhere. So I was like, what? So I had never heard this urban legend, and we were still quite young at that point. But he's like, yeah, did you hear about this lady? They say that she had babies with the raccoons. And I'm like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
And it's weird that I saw what I think is a younger boy skulking around the ditches at night with like pointy, I thought they were cat-like, but they could be raccoon-type ears.
Yeah.
Like, this is a like city. I mean, we have farmland and some forests and stuff, but I mean, like, we were in a city. So, but like the fact that he said that, when I never heard of this, that's an urban legend, I guess. And that's the first thing I thought of years later was like this freaking raccoon type boy in the ditches at night.
Wow.
And he almost reminded me of like, you know, in the movie, Peter Pan sees his shadow and the shadow's like flying around. So he's got like a young, thin boyish type shadow. Mm-hmm. That's what it reminds me of. The freaking ears.
Huh.
So yeah, and again, I was super young. I never told anybody, and I didn't even say anything to my dad at that point. I mean, it was like, you know, it was a stressful situation too. And I just remember looking and just staring at it, like, what the hell is it? Until it kind of just dropped down and disappeared into the ditches.
Now we have new cryptid folks to add to the raccoon lady and raccoon boy. I like it better than Dogman.
Dogman and raccoon boy. That's my only cryptid type thing, and I've never heard of that one before.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting, though, that to hear the story from the guy who lived in that area, it's just odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what was really, because, like, technically, there could be some weird kid roam, you know, crawling around the ditches at night with raccoon ear, like, with a cat ear or headband on or something, you know, but, like, he said that when we were talking about going to the same school when we were younger, like living in the same area. Like, what the? And I never told, even then I didn't say anything about what I thought, right?
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
That's what was weird, was the, hey, did you hear about this lady and the raccoon?
Certainly no one's reproducing with raccoons, at least not, you know, outside of something truly paranormal, supernatural happening.
Right.
But the folklore, and then to see what you saw is just really, really interesting. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if somebody at some point also saw some sort of raccoon type humanoid, then I mean, I guess maybe that's where their imagination went. How do you, I guess it's got to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I did see a UFO, and it wasn't just me. It was me and my dad. My dad is actually like super into astronomy and space and stuff. And he's a very scientific, very smart, like book smart kind of guy. And I remember coming outside one day on the driveway and he's standing there looking up at the sky, staring at something. I'm like, what are you looking at? I think I was like maybe 12 or something at the time. He's like, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's like this, the weirdest thing, right? And so he pointed it out to me, middle of the day. It was really small, but you could definitely see that it was like a metallic sphere type shape, way the hell up in the sky. Nothing else. And this is the thing is, what gets me is that my dad is so intelligent and so into stars and planets. Any big star I saw in the sky or anything like interesting or anything, I would point it out and he's like, oh, well, that's Jupiter, or oh, that's Mars at this time of the year, it shows up more, you know, like he knows the stars and the planets and asteroid, he knows when an asteroid thing is happening. So like the fact that he's standing there middle of the day like wondering what the hell this thing is. And I remember as soon as I started watching it, he pointed out that like it would just jump. It would just be one place on one side of the sky, and then we'd have to hunt for it, you know, it would shoot off, and we'd have to look for it again.
Hmm.
At one point, he went and got the camcorder, because that's how old I am. I don't know if we still have that tape anywhere, but, like, he was, like, weirded out enough by it, and him being so well-versed in, you know, things in the sky, that definitely stood out to me, because
yeah.
I was like, what the hell is that? And, like, he knows things and stuff about the sky, and like, you know, sometimes the planets look like stars and they're brighter and they show up a bit earlier, you know, maybe before the sun even goes down, you know, like sometimes you can see the moon and some of the planets before it's even, it's dark,
yeah,
right? But he would know. And it was moving, there's that.
Yeah. Was he able to capture it on video? Do you remember watching the video then?
I don't remember watching it after or not. I think he tried, but I mean, I remember it was very small.
Mm-hmm.
And it was moving quite a bit, and
yeah,
it was like,
yeah, it's hard enough
in the '90s, so I don't know what kind of quality.
Right. Yeah, it's hard enough to get stuff with the most modern tech. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't remember that really panning out, but yeah, just remember us standing there watching that, being like, "What the heck is this?" That house was the first place I saw my first ghost in the middle of the day. we had a like family room where we all watched TV and ate and things like that. And we had like a living room out front that had like the nice furniture and the, you know, it was pretty off limits for the most part. And especially for our dog, we wasn't allowed in the front there. And she was pretty good at not going in there unless we had like a whole family in there or whatever, right? She'd try to sneak in with us. She stayed out of there for the most part. One day she was like backed up in the corner in the dining area, barking her face off at something. So I went in because I was like, what the heck is her problem? What is going on here? And so she was barking at something, you know, like, so I was like, okay, so I followed the direction of like her eye line or her sight line or whatever. Like, what are you barking at? And I look over and my grandma, who was no longer with us, was just sitting there on the couch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Middle of the day. And it was just like the movies too. Like, she was just kind of fear and I could see right through her. Sitting on the couch, having a cigarette. She died of emphysema. So, like, she would get me to roll her cigarette. So, like, very fitting that she's sitting there having a, just chilling, you know, like, just calmly having a cigarette and looking. She was kind of looking at the wall, like, she wasn't looking at us. And I did, like, the full-on, like, cartoon. Like, I closed my eyes and I rubbed them both. Like, I rubbed them, like, what the heck? Like, thinking she would go away, or like I was just like imagining this or whatever. And I opened my eyes and she was still there, just sitting there, like plain as day.
So did she disappear? Did you stop looking? Like, how did that resolve?
At one point I looked down to grab my dog again, and then, you know, and then I looked up and she was gone.
Yeah.
And she calmed down at that point. Yeah. So it didn't last long, and I don't remember her looking or moving or anything like that. She just sitting there slowly having a cigarette. Huh. I felt like, because she had passed away, we were really close. If she had passed away 2 weeks after my sister was born and before we had moved into this new house that we built and we owned. So I know, I just felt like she was just popping in, popping by.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first time I had seen just like straight up, head to toe, full on ghost, middle of the day, which is funny. But again, it was the dog that caught my attention. She was acting strange. She was pointing straight at the couch that she was sitting on.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another thing where I was like, okay, I'm not making this up, because the only reason I came in here to look at that couch that got my attention was the dog, right? Acting weird.
Yeah. Had your grandmother ever been in that house?
No.
That's interesting. See, that's cool.
No, it didn't even exist. We had built cool. it from scratch, too.
Yeah, see, that is super interesting. I often say, like, you don't require an old rundown Victorian mansion to have ghosts, you know? So many stories of very modern or newly built places that have activity anyway. But that's really interesting. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, actually, that's cool that you point that out, because I do believe there is activity that is possibly some sort of, like, imprint or, like, residual energy or, you know, something that was imprinted in that. Usually an old home, right?
Sure, yeah.
And that may not be of, like, sentient, you know, nature. But no, she had never been in that house. And actually, it was her family that we helped build it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really felt like she was just popping in, checking it out, you know, coming to visit.
If it had been, in her place, wherever she was, most often, you'd say, well, okay, mm-hmm. maybe it's just a residual haunting kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, grandma was showing up for some reason.
Yeah. There was one time in that same house, that same area, that I saw spirit or whatever in like full. We were driving down the street. My dad was driving. And I remember seeing a woman walking in the street in front of us. She was walking away from us. She was wearing like bright colored, like almost like what I think would be like African, like maybe Nigerian, like type, but bright print, the bright fabric, like draped, you know, like she was wearing like a skirt out of this bright fabric, this beautiful print. She was a black woman from what I could see. I was just about to say, like, hey, do you not see her? Like, you're going to drive into her, right? Like, we were in the, like, driving around the houses, like, we weren't driving very fast. I was just about to say, are you going to slow down? because she was walking right in front of us, right in front of the car, coming up to her. Just as I was going to say that, he drove through her. Like, technically, if it was a real human, we would have hit her.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as I was going to open my mouth, boom, she's right there, and then she's gone. Nowhere to see. It was, like I said, middle of the day, middle of the suburbs. You know, there was houses everywhere, yards. Like, it was open. She was gone. Poof, gone.
I think in the history of the show, I think we've had, like, two or three other very, very similar kind of stories.
Yeah.
Where somebody was just in the road, and sometimes it's suddenly, you know, and people are like, whoa, you know, and they see somebody and
yeah,
they're just gone then. They're expecting to hit somebody and they don't hit anything.
Yeah, right? I was in a parkade, like an underground parkade, and I'd gotten out of my car and walked to the, like, entrance. So it's like, you know, like the little, like, cement, it's almost like a little cement room or whatever in the parking lot where you go in and you get into the elevator to
yeah.
go up.
Yeah.
And there was, like, you know, it's pretty empty, and I'm walking towards the door, and there's an older woman coming up kind of in, like, to the side of me. So she almost got to the door at the same time as me, but I got there first, so I held it open for her, right? I'm standing there. She was literally right beside me. Like, I think I reached for the door because she was older, and I was like, oh, I'll grab it, right? It was like a heavy metal fire door. And I remember grabbing the door and, like, standing there waiting for her to come through. And she doesn't come through. And then I look and there's nobody there. And again, a big open parking lot. And she's just poof gone.
I mean, maybe she walked through anyway.
That's a good point. Yeah. I was always kind of interested in ghosts and things like that. And I think I read about astral projection. I don't know. Or maybe this happening is what caused me to. But anyway, like I mentioned, I didn't always have the best sleep. I was downstairs in our family room by myself and at night, and I'd fallen asleep on, like, the floor. I think I'd put, like, the couch cushions on the floor for some reason. Sometimes I would fall asleep better on the couch than I would in my own bedroom. So I was on the floor on some cushions asleep, and I remember just kind of waking up in the middle of the night, as you do, and I remember looking over to my side, and we had, like, some of my grandma's, actually, I think it was that grandma that came in. It was one of my grandma's, like those buffet, like, china cabinet type things, and there's, like, some drawers on the bottom. And I just remember looking over and, like, seeing the drawers, which didn't seem weird at first until I realized there's a good, like, 6-inch gap from the floor to the bottom of the furniture. And then there's a couple drawers, but they're, like, a foot or two in the air. So that's when I realized I was floating a foot or two in the air above the ground because I was in line up with these drawers on the buffet. And as soon as I realized, oh, that's weird, I just went boop right down back onto my cushions where I was lying, back into my body, I assume.
Mm-hmm. I've heard this a number of times. It's not happened to me, but yeah, I've had a number of similar things on the show. Mm-hmm.
I was interested in stuff, but I didn't want to explore it too much because I had actually read a book where a girl would astral project every night, and then one time she came back and, like, her body was gone, and her body was just, like, having dinner with her family, and she was like, wait a minute.
Wow.
Like, somebody else had gone into her body when she was gone, so I'm like, that is terrifying. Let's not do that. At that same, like, living room, I didn't think about this too much until I started listening to the show, too. Yeah, there's odd little UFO alien things sprinkled throughout my life, I guess. In that living room, yeah, I would fall asleep on the couch a lot. I remember waking up in the middle of the night on the couch, and there was this small window that actually opened up onto our patio on our deck in the back, and I was being watched
Ooh.
Through that window. I didn't know much about it now. I mean, I guess we all see the weird movies and stuff, but like, it was a shorter, smaller creature, like humanoid type thing. I get the feeling that it was like small, gray,
mm-hmm.
you know, hairless, clothless, big head, and just peeking at me through that window. And I was not having sleep paralysis. I could move, but I did not want to.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew I was being watched, and I just did the whole, like, I'm just going to pretend I don't see you.
Were you able to go back to sleep?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. See, that's so weird. And that, like, happens again and again, too. You should have been so scared that you're like, nope, not going back to sleep. I'm up till 5, you know, till the sun comes up, whenever that is. And
right?
No, but somehow, it again and again, story after story.
Yeah.
People just, it just went right back to sleep.
Yeah. Almost like your body is just like, okay.
Yeah, or else, like, we can get you when you're awake, but it's a heck of a lot easier to get you while you're sleeping.
Yeah, yeah. I personally believe there are, I mean, like, even as you put it, others, or like extraterrestrials, or I have become aware of, like, light beings and things like that. So, like, I feel like I understand that they exist. I don't think that they're all there to, like, do harm.
Yeah.
And he was outside. That was the funny thing. It was just, like, one little dude outside the window, like, just peeking in. Not, like, the time where I was, like, being physically dragged off my bed. Yeah, I do believe they might be a little nosy. I do believe they may do healings or whatever, you know, while you're asleep. This is a funny one and, like, ties into kind of, like, the not sleeping world. This was a few months ago. I was sleeping, and I just remember hearing in my head, like, in my dream, it was, like, two people talking, right? But it started off when I was sleeping in my head, and it was like, oh, yeah, she'll react to any noise in this place. Like, I live in a small place, right? So mm-hmm. I can hear everything here. The crazy thing is that halfway through that sentence, I'm woken up by this noise, like something falling and smashing on my floor. So, like, it was like half asleep, half awake, being woken up by this noise. This voice going, oh, yeah, she'll react to any noise in this place.
Yeah.
And I woke up and I was like, what the hell is that? So I came out into my kitchen, and a empty pill bottle had been knocked off the top of my fridge. I'm like, I don't have cats. It wasn't sitting on the edge of the fridge. It was like laying flat in like a bowl, you know, like just kind of like a little catch-all bowl I have on top of my,
mm-hmm.
with a bunch of little crap, right? It flew off and landed on the floor in the middle of that sentence. Oh yeah, she'll react to any sound in this place. Boom. It wasn't just a dream. It was like halfway in the dream, and then this thing just flew off the freaking fridge.
Yeah, that's super interesting, though. Like, I've had those sort of things that dream transposes into waking time or whatever, however you would call that. That's very, very interesting to me.
It's funny. I think that's the first time. Like, I've heard weird noises or I've had weird dreams, but never really the combination of the two. And again, that's the part where I was like, okay, that's weird, because I was thinking or hearing, oh, she'll react to any noise. And then, you know.
The question, I guess, is why did whatever want you awake at that point? Like, was there a reason for that?
That's true. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I didn't really look into it much. I just feel like it was just goofing around with me, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was taking a dream class with this, like, spiritual kind of teacher that I had found online. The whole thing was that we were going to, she had a recorded meditation that we would do before we go to sleep. There was like a whole group of us. None of us knew each other. We met online and talked online. So she had posted three pictures. So three places that we could travel to in our dreams. I guess the astral plane kind of deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, the one that we chose, was a picture of what turned out to be Mount Shasta. And at this point, I had never heard of it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was this, like, spiritual epicenter. I knew nothing about it, right? Mm-hmm. And again, with my ADHD and my scatterbrain, I was like, I didn't do my homework, where it's not like I researched it or anything. I literally just took that picture and looked at it when I laid in bed and then listened to her recorded meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So my dream ended up being I was flying around the mountain and I came down at the base of the mountain and there was a beach and there was all these people there in white robes. Different ages, different genders, different sizes, different colors, everybody. Like, there's just people all over this beach. There was a monkey with a snail shell on its back. I still haven't figured out what that means. But I flew over the base of the mountain. There was a beach. There was a lake. And there's all these people in these white robes. And I remember flying up in the air and going over the mountain and seeing the group below me on the mountain. This is all I remember of the dream. So as a group, we got together on a call the next day, and they all started sharing their dream. And they had all talked how they were in a group on the mountain, and they'd looked up and seen a dragon flying around.
Oh, wow.
It turns out there's significance in that. There's significance in my life for dragons. There's significance in Mount Shasta for dragons. That's a whole other tangent. But they all talked about being in the group together and that they saw this person and that person. The leader of the group was like, yeah, you weren't there. I saw you walking uphill when we were walking downhill. So I was separate from the group flying around and that group is like, oh, we saw a dragon in the sky. And I'm like, what the hell? So, and this was before I shared my dream, right? So I was like, this is what happened, right? So it was my time to share what happened to me. So I told them about flying around and I was like, yeah, I went to the base of the mountain. There was like water and a beach and all these people. And she's like, oh, there's a lake there. And there's like, some people believe there's like civilization, like people under like an ancient civilization under the mountain. And she started talking about the Lemurians and everything. And I was like, I didn't know any of this. I didn't know about the lake. I didn't know about the beach. I didn't know the history of the mountain, you know, what people believe is going on there. None of that. But I saw it in that freaking dream. And they saw me flying around.
Why were you a dragon?
I don't know if I was necessarily a dragon. When I actually ended up in Mount Shasta at this like like woo-woo retreat. There was a woman there that told me that they're talked about dragon riders.
Hmm.
Apparently Kuan Yin is a dragon rider, was a dragon type like keeper almost. So there was like, again, also I've come to the understanding that that dragons did or maybe still do exist in a way, but like on that other dimension, other level of energy that may not be our 3D, you know, solid, solidified, you know, material way, but that it's a type of energy. So yeah, I don't know if I was necessarily the dragon or if I was maybe riding the dragon, because apparently that's a thing.
Okay.
These dragon riders.
Yeah. Were these shared dreams experiments, were they relatively successful? I mean, did you all meet in dreams somewhat regularly?
That was the only one we did.
Interesting.
But everything lined up. That's what I thought was the crazy thing. I just looked at that one picture, went to sleep, and then we woke up and we all had, you know, it all lined up. We were all there, it all lined up. I saw things that I didn't know about the mountain. Yeah, I wish we had continued to do that, but yeah.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I've read some books on like, you know, dreams and sleep stuff and all, and they talked about the shared dreams like that, and I always found that very interesting. And when you ended up going to Mount Shasta, was it similar to how it looked in your dream?
I wanted to go into the lake. That didn't happen. But we did go up the mountain. But yes, unfortunately, we weren't able to go down into the, like, the water area that I'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did look at other pictures, I was able to find pictures that looked similar. So that was super weird.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I'm going to have to go back, like, maybe on my own so I can just kind of float around a little more and just end up where the wind takes me.
Or just, you know, fly a dragon around.
Yeah. I wish. So I know you've had some interactions with possible extraterrestrials and all that. I don't remember if you mentioned much about like implants or had anybody who mentioned it.
Yeah, I'm certainly aware of them, and I'm sure we've had people on before, but not a lot. But, you know, I'm certainly aware of the phenomena.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the first time I kind of heard of this was, again, I was just getting into getting back into like spiritual stuff, spooky stuff, all that. So I'd kind of gone into that, I guess, area of curiosity, the more like UFO extraterrestrial thing. And I had read something about implants, but again, the way I took it was more like energetic. I work with energy. I understand energy. So it was more of an energetic implant, not like a literal chip, you know, like I've seen people claim, right? And it's just talking about like kind of almost like sovereignty over your body and what they do with you. And like almost kind of like it was just this thing that you read out that was basically like asking for all implants to be removed, all connection, like this is my body.
Right.
So anything that you've like done with it or anything that's causing me to like keep me from doing like the spiritual work or the energetic work that I'm meant to do while I'm here kind of thing. Like, please, like, be gone, remove, you know, this kind of thing, right? And again, I remember thinking it was an energetic type thing. But I woke up the next day and I looked down and I had a bit of blood on my leg where I thought it was like scar tissue or like, it was just this weird little lump that appeared on my leg. I don't know. I have a chunk of lead stuck in my knee somewhere because I ran and jumped on my bed and jammed a pencil in my knee, right?
Okay.
I remember it was just kind of like this weird little lump on my thigh that just happened. And that's where the blood was. And there was like a scab and it was like open. Like it was whatever that was in there was gone.
Huh.
Yeah. It was gone and there was a little bit of blood, like kind of scabbed a bit on my leg and a couple spots of blood on my sheet. And that little freaking lump was gone.
Interesting. That's really interesting. And that happened directly after you did this request or whatever to remove it.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And again, I did it thinking like, oh, it's like a energetic thing and like these like, you know, like these like angelic Pleiadian beings will come while I sleep and like, you know,
yeah
heal me, remove the, you know, whatever, that kind of thing, right? That's where I was at. And then I wake up and I'm freaking bleeding.
That's very interesting.
Yeah,
I got a lot of weird lumps all over my body. Maybe I should try this.
Yeah, that's the thing. I just thought it was just like a weird little lump on my leg or something. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
but yeah, That was very interesting.
Come to find out, the Greys have an implant in my arm, the Palladians in my leg, the reptilians have one somewhere else.
Multicultural implant. So this is my best friend in high school. We were kind of into like weird, spooky stuff. But anyways, we went and stayed over at her aunt and uncle's house. So it was an old farmhouse. And they had a bit of land. And I remember her and her sister telling me that their little cousins, two little boys, would tell them about the door slamming. So there's like this weird little room up in their room, this little tiny door, you know, a spooky, spooky little tiny door and like a weird random room mm-hmm. up in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So like totally creepy. But they had a bunk bed in their room. And the oldest got the top one, right? Because he's the oldest one. But he always ended up in the bottom with the younger boy. So they asked him once, they were like, why do you always go in the bottom bunk? Like, the top bunk's like the cool bunk, right? Like, what's your big boy bunk? And he said, oh, because the little boy in the room gets angry and slams the door. It's like, okay. So I remember that night, that we slept over, we were so like intrigued by this. We actually, I think we did like rock, paper, scissors to see if me and my friend would sleep in the room or if the older girls would sleep in the room. But the older girls ended up winning. Nothing happened. But my friend would asked her cousin. She said, you know, can you show me the drawings that you showed me? So he would make these creepy drawings with these, you know, like dark figures and stuff like that. And we were like, well, what's this one? And he's like, well, that's the guy in the garden, in the yard. And we're like, oh, there's somebody in the yard, in the ground? And he's like, well, he was in the ground, and then he was out of it. And he's like, I didn't dig him up. I'll never forget that. But I didn't dig him up.
Huh.
Yeah. So this poor kid was seeing all these things, like multiple. They actually did look into the history of the house. Unfortunately, somebody had ran over a small boy with like a car or like farm equipment or something.
Mm.
But yeah, the little boy would get mad and slam the little door.
Wow.
But I'll just never forget that. He was in the ground and then he wasn't. And I didn't dig him up.
Yeah. That's from the mouths of babes.
Right?
Yeah. Jenna, thank you for sharing your stories.
Thank you for having me and thank you for doing what you do.
Well, as Allison isn't with us tonight, there is no Curiosity of the Week, but make sure to join us on Whatnot tomorrow night at 7 p.m. We'll maybe have some curiosities there. Before we go, though, I want to thank Zoe, who sent us this really amazing playing card deck called the Folklore Deck. Just really beautiful artwork on it. Thank you so much, Zoe. And one last thing, for Strange Familiars merch, go to strangefamiliars.com/merch. That'll show you images of all of our merch. If you click on those images, it'll take you to our Etsy shop, where you can purchase Strange Familiars t-shirts, stickers, mugs, tote bags, and more. Also at Etsy are copies of my books. If you get them from us on Etsy, they come signed. You don't even have to ask. I'll sign them before we pack them up. Artwork, prints, and originals there. Like I said, I restocked the Black Dog print and the Bigfoot Big Heart print, as well as the Mothman print. All prints of my artwork. There's also some originals you can purchase on Etsy. I'm hoping to restock the Paracord Rosary soon. Issue 2 of Petals and Thorns, the little zine of Catholic ephemera I put together, is out. You can check out all of our offerings, again, at Etsy. Our shop name is Lost Grave, but if you type in Strange Familiars at Etsy, you should see our stuff come up. There's always links in the show notes as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back soon with more Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. We are on Instagram, @strangefamiliars, one word, no underscore. Please like our posts and follow us there on Instagram. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where there is the Strange Familiars gathering group as well. And you can find us 24/7 at strangefamiliars.com.
Wandering, not lost, we walk through wild flowers, me and my brother. Listening for hours to songs of rain showers. Treading so lightly, we step through the briar, me and my mother, all crowned in horn, a rose among thorns. the fruit we're seeking.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.